Okay, today's talk will be a history lesson on what to do and what not to do in life in general. 1993, I moved into IBMC with the hopes of being ordained in 1994, the grand ordination, which I didn't know what it was. It was a grand ordination. It was an amazing event. It's on the websites, and you can see pictures and read about it. And in 1994, I became a novice monk. And Reverend Karuna said, we'd like you to be here and work with us. And I'm going to make you the residential manager. And then you'll be doing easy repairs around the center, because the center is really old and it always needs repair. I said, sounds good. So I got my tools and my hat and started to do that. And then we would interview people who wanted to move in here. And we had something called RAC, Resident Action Committee. So for instance, if you wanted to move into Kwan Yin House next door, the residents would interview you as well as I would interview them. And so that would give the residents a chance to see who might be moving in next to them and what kind of attitudes they had and stuff like that. And most of the time it worked out. It's hard to get good residents all the time. And then I would fix water faucets and things that leaked, and I would paint, and if somebody moved out, I would fix up the room for the next person to move in. And that was pretty much my job, you know. And then after a while, I started to lead meditation. And then Reverend Karuna called me into her apartment and said, I'm going to ask you a question. I'm thinking about giving you advanced training. I'm not sure you're ready for this, because it will change your life. And I went, whoa. Some secret training from the abbess. She said, Doug has been here and been feeding the cats for 2 years now. He's getting tired. Doesn't want to do it anymore. Kusala, I want you to feed the animals at IBMC. And I'm thinking to myself, this is advanced training? What does that mean? She said, we'll buy the food, and we expect you to keep the yards clean and feed the dogs. And at that time, we didn't have cats, but we had dogs, fish, and birds. Feed them once a day, and you have to do it every day. And I thought to myself, well, yeah, that makes sense. They're hungry, and they get hungry every day. Now, I want to give you an insight into feeding animals. I have fed the animals here for 25 years. And they're still hungry. That doesn't go away. That was one of the training insights that she wanted me to have. That when you get involved in service, for instance, in the Mahayana tradition, as a bodhisattva, it doesn't end. And oftentimes, in the Mahayana tradition, people will take vows to come back lifetime after lifetime until all suffering has ended. The problem is, like the animals, suffering keeps coming. The more people we have, the more suffering. So I looked at this as an odd way of training as a monk. We're going to jump ahead to 1997, February. 1997, LA Times article, Zen, USA. My picture was in the paper. My picture was in the LA Times. I went, wow, this is so cool. And if you're curious about it, it's on my homepage online, kusala.info, kusala.info. You can see the picture and read about it. I've also put that picture as the picture on my homepage. And why did I do that? Because I just read something the other day. If you want to put a good picture on your webpage, always post an old one. I went, yeah. No current, well, there are current pictures, but it doesn't start that way. So it's, I was really excited. This was fun. I didn't know what it would mean. I didn't know if my animal feeding training would come in handy. But I got a phone call. I got a phone call from Deacon Szymanski, L.A. County State Prison for Men, Lancaster, California. Kusala, I saw your picture, man. You were in the paper. Would you like me to come up and be a chaplain at the prison and talk to the Buddhist prisoners and lead them in meditation? And my response was, Buddhist prisoners? Do Buddhists go to prison? I thought to myself. Apparently they do. Even after Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, Five Precepts, 10 Factors of Enlightenment, even after all this training and understanding, they still end up in prison. I went, man. So for a year, I was up there and I found other volunteers to help me. And we started a meditation program. And they would come to the chapel. I never got to see where they actually lived. I was only allowed in the chapel. And what I noticed about prisoners when they meditate is they never close their eyes because they don't trust the guy sitting next to them. I went, wow, okay. One time, the prisoners came up to me in mass and said, we'd like you to do us a favor, Kusala. We'd like you to go to the warden and ask the warden to change our diet because we're all vegetarian and the food here is terrible. I thought for a moment. I said to them, I'm not here to change your diet. I'm here to change your mind. I thought it was pretty good. They didn't think that was so hot. But we got along. There was a, I have to mention this because this is funny in retrospect, that I would bring up cassette tapes of Dharma talks. And they'd stay in the chapel and we had the bookshelves and they could, the prisoners could, you know, take one back to their cell, listen to it, bring it back, get another one, that kind of stuff. So Mr. Noy Russell, Central Juvenile Hall, Kusala, I saw your picture in the paper, man. Can you come and visit us in Juvenile Hall? Juvenile Hall? I said, are there any Buddhists there? He said, well, we haven't found any, but there are a lot of people suffering here. I think they'd like to hear what you have to say. Okay. So I ended up being there for 5 years. And one of the years I was the probation department volunteer of the year. You got this little sort of plastic thing and felt really good about that. You know, when you're a volunteer and when you're a volunteer chaplain, they don't pay you anything. Your job is to show up and be as useful as you can. And I remember being interviewed by somebody at Juvenile Hall, and they said, you know, what kind of qualifications do you have to be here? And I looked at them and said, I feed cats. Well, that's good enough for me. Okay, thank you. After 5 years, it was time to go. Because I got another phone call. Kusala, we saw your picture in the paper, man. Can you come and help us at the Garden Grove Police Department and be a ride-along police chaplain? I said, you know what? One of my favorite shows is Cops. I'd love to be a chaplain and ride around in the police car. So I rode around in the police car. I was there for 7 years. Got certificates, got a lot of people saying thank you for coming and being part of our organization. And in each case, at Juvenile Hall and at the police department and the state prison, I learned so much about me. And I realized the discipline in feeding the animals at IBMC led to a different kind of view about the world and a view of suffering and the end of suffering. So in a very strange, weird way that wasn't obvious to me, not obvious at all, when Reverend Kuna said, I've got some advanced training for you. And I felt so proud. Ah, I get the advanced training. Here's the cat food, here's the dog food, here's the bird food. Yeah, okay. Now, Piyananda, Venerable Piyananda, called me up, said, Kusala, he didn't see the picture in the paper. Kusala, can you help me out? I said, sure, Piyananda, what would you like me to do? He said, I have a woman at UCLA named Heidi Singh, and she's the chaplain at UCLA for the University Religious Conference. And the University Religious Conference has come to me to ask me what chaplain I can recommend, because Heidi needs to step down. She's a wife, she's a mother, she has a job. She's got like a lot of stuff to do. And I thought about you. Would you be willing to be a chaplain at UCLA? And I said, sure. What the hell? And he said, okay, I'll set up an interview for you, and you can go in and talk to everybody and see if you like it, and then you're the guy. And I said, okay. So I went in, and I was the guy. I was the guy for 12 years, you know. And one of the things about being a chaplain, I got to bring this up, because we have somebody who's thinking about being a chaplain in the back there, is when you're a chaplain and when you're a volunteer chaplain, the question arises, how long am I going to volunteer? The rest of my life, till Tuesday, maybe 3 years. And I never went in with an end date. I just started. And then as it went through all the different years and gyrations and different manifestations, then it became obvious to me that it might be getting close to the time when I need to step down, because there's like other stuff to do. And so 12 years at UCLA, I learned a lot. The Catholics were very nice to us. They let us use the Catholic Center. So we would have our Buddhist club meetings in the Catholic Center. And this very profound evening, there's something called the Second Vatican Council that happened in Rome. And one of the bishops was giving a talk to the Catholic Club, and the Buddhist Club was invited to sit in and listen. And so we were there, and he was good. He was eloquent. He was profound. He was insightful. He's all the things a Catholic bishop should be. And then one of the Catholic students asked him a very interesting question that I could hardly wait to hear the answer to. Why does God let people suffer? And being a Buddhist, I thought that's a damn good question. And he thought for a moment, and he said, because God wants to have you have a choice. If you suffer, it's your choice. I thought, man, it's about the choice. And it's about working on yourself to have better choices so you suffer less. And you get into these little places and pockets of insight and wisdom, and it can just blow your mind, because you're not expecting anything like that at a university in a Buddhist Catholic club meeting with a bishop. You think it's just going to be pretty dry and upfront, and you've heard it before. So after all those years of being a volunteer, of being a volunteer at the juvenile hall and at state prison and UCLA and let me put it this way. It's all in my book. And if you have a chance to drop by Barnes & Noble's, or if you're on Amazon, it's available in paperback and Kindle. So I came away from this whole experience. Now, do I want to volunteer anymore? Only for a day or two. This when you commit yourself for 12 years at UCLA, that's really a long time. And the chaplains come and go. There's some camaraderie. There's some things that just irritate people, and some people that irritate people. And you find out all of this by volunteering and doing something. And I have to look back and say, number one, Karuna wanting me to feed the animals was profound. She was a bit quirky sometimes. She was an interesting person. And it was hard to pin her down. You couldn't put her in a box. And being a female and running a Buddhist meditation center, she had a lot of work to do in the community to bring credibility to her role as abbess. So I have to just, as I look back, I didn't know that at the time. At the time, I was just, it was me and Karuna talking. You know, it was only after she was gone and I had years to reflect and the profound insights that she would have and speak about in sort of odd and interesting ways that didn't filter into me. Then I have to say that because she gave me a job here, because she allowed me to stay here, that freed up my time to be a volunteer. There are a lot of people out there who would love to be a volunteer, but they get a wife and kids and house payments and cars and all that kind of stuff. They have to work. They have to do stuff. And the kind of work that I did here was flexible. So I had a lot of time in between the work I was doing here to go and do work out there and to see how a single person could make a small difference in every situation. And I love this. When I was the police chaplain, there was an article on me being the police chaplain, a couple of them actually, and you can find them on my homepage, kusala.info. And they figured out that I was the second Buddhist police chaplain in the United States, written in the paper. Now, I thought, wow, that's cool. So when people would come up to me and say, hey, I saw the article, who was the first police chaplain? It's just such a wonderful way of keeping you humble when you see this and you see that, and it's just like, you know, and your ego starts to take off a little bit, and then somebody just comes in, hits you in the face and goes, yeah, you don't know who the first one was, huh? Okay. So I just showed up. Did I ever save anybody? Did I ever give any wise interpretation of the Dharma to people? You know, I just showed up. I have no idea what effect I had on people. And I think that's the right attitude after thinking about it all these years, is you go in, you do what you do, you leave, and you go have a cup of coffee. You don't dwell on it. You don't try to lift yourself up or put yourself down. Your job is to show up. That's it. And that's what I did for over 20 years, is I showed up. And now, after all that time out in the world, doing all that stuff, now I do all the stuff on the internet. And I find I don't even have to smell good to do it. I can just pull out that computer, and it gives me bookends on my day. And some of the older people in the crowd will agree with me, perhaps, that 9 p.m. is the new midnight. So as we get older, it's a little more difficult to stay up late. But I just found a wonderful article about waking up early. Now, I wake up every day between 3:30 and 4:30. And it is the best time of the day. Only a couple ambulances. No helicopters yet, a few modified exhaust pipes, but it's relatively quiet. And there's a certain peacefulness that sort of surrounds this whole neighborhood, which during the day and night is absent. And so I'm up there and I'm posting on my Facebook page. If you're interested to follow me on Facebook, I'm there every morning. I now have 36,000 followers and 5,000 friends. And I haven't met one of them. But ain't that the way the internet works? And I posted a lot of different kinds of stuff, you know, and people seem to like it. And animal pictures are always go over well. And then I've got my YouTube channel, and I have my podcasts. I've got my website, which is over 1,500 pages and gets 40 or 50,000 page views a month. And so I've turned the work that I do in the world to the work I do in a virtual world, the internet. And I find having something to do is really important. The older we get, the less people want us to do stuff and the less stuff there is to do. I asked somebody the other day who was retired and rather old, what do you do? He said, I do errands. Well, that makes sense. There's a lot of errands. I went to the bank the other day running an errand, but I literally parked 12 blocks away because my bank's in Santa Monica and enjoyed the walk, looking at the ocean, looking at the pier, looking at the 1,000 tourists that are still out in Santa Monica. And when I got to the bank, the teller said, why do you park so far away? We have parking right below the bank. I said, I wanted an adventure. Now, she didn't have a clue what that meant. But, you know, at some point, we have the time, if you're retired and old, to have a little mini adventure every once in a while, walking through the neighborhood or going to the store. So Buddhism, for me, has given me something to do and something to be. And as I age into my transition, my next rebirth, I look back with fondness on all those people, because nobody ever does it alone. All those people who are part of your journey and the journey itself, and how odd a life journey is. Because no matter what you want it to do for you, it has its own will and mind. Life is like the river flowing to the ocean. And it just keeps flowing, and you want it to go to the left, and you want it to go to the right, and it doesn't. So it's constant adaptation to the life challenges and successes. And the whole idea is not to take it personally. Because the Buddha said, not self. There is a self there. It helps us. It defines our world for us. But it's not who we are. And if you really want to know who you are, I don't know how to tell you to do it. A lot of Zen masters will say, that's your koan. That's the question that can't be answered. Who are you? And one of the famous responses is mu, M-U. Now, I don't know what the hell that means. So I just gave up. I'm going to close with this quote. Tim Leary. Anybody remember Tim Leary? Tim Leary said, my three favorite words are, I don't know. Because when I say them, I always learn something new. And what is the secret training? Generosity. Dana. That's the secret training. I think it's the first paramita too, if I'm not mistaken. Dana.